Hello, welcome once again to Leto's Law. I'm Steve Leto. Today we're going to talk about a case from the Supreme Court that many people have asked me about, including Leon, who sent me the most recent email suggesting I talk about this case. And it's the case that everyone knows as the one where it says that the police don't have to help you. It's a little more complicated than that, but it is an interesting case. It's a case called Castle Rock versus Gonzalez. And the case actually goes back to 2005, so it's already an old case as far as that goes. But Justice Antonin Scalia wrote the opinion, so don't get mad at me. Got to talk to him about this. Scalia delivered the opinion of the court, and in the case, the Supreme Court decides whether an individual who has obtained a state law restraining order has a constitutionally protected property interest in having the police enforce the restraining order when they have probable cause to believe it has been violated. So that's the very narrow issue, okay? The woman had a restraining order. I'll tell you the whole story in a second. And when the restraining order wasn't enforced, she sued the police for their lack of enforcement of the restraining order. And now, because of the way this case has come down and been read by people, many people have extrapolated from it that if you call the police and report a problem to them and they don't respond, you can't really hold them liable for it, because that's just one of the things they're allowed to do is fail to respond to calls for help. So that's the broad reading, but the very, very narrow reading. Let's talk about these facts. And the facts are horrible. Even Scalia said that. The horrible facts of this case are contained in the complaint that respondent Jessica Gonzalez filed in federal district court. We assume the allegations are true. She alleges that petitioner, the town of Castle Rock, Colorado, violated the due process clause of the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution when its police officers, acting under official policy, failed to respond properly to her repeated reports that her estranged husband was violating the terms of a restraining order. And it's actually a little worse than that. The restraining order had been issued by a state trial court several weeks earlier in conjunction with a contentious divorce proceeding. And part of it said that he was not allowed to molest or disturb the peace of respondent or of any of the children, and to remain at least 100 yards from the family home at all times. And then on the back was a pre-printed notice that said, important notices for restrained parties and law enforcement officials. And the pre-printed text on the back of the form included the following warning: a knowing violation of a restraining order is a crime. A violation will also constitute contempt of court. You may be arrested without notice if a law enforcement officer has probable cause to believe that you have knowingly violated this order. So that language is clearly aimed at the guy who is named in the restraining order. Now, the pre-printed text on the back of the form also included a notice to law enforcement officials. So it actually says, look, you're the guy in the order. This is what we're telling you. Hey, cops, we're telling you this. And it has instructions for the police. And it says, and this is all caps, by the way, you shall use every reasonable means to enforce this restraining order. You shall arrest, or if an arrest would be impractical under the circumstances, seek a warrant for the arrest of the restrained person when you have information amounting to probable cause that the restrained person has violated or attempted to violate any provision of this order, and the restrained person has been properly served with a copy of this order or has received actual notice of the existence of this order. And so that order became a permanent restraining order that was served on the guy in question in the story. According to the complaint filed by the complainant in the federal district court, at about 5 or 5:30 p.m. on Tuesday, June 22nd, 1999, respondent's husband took the three daughters while they were playing outside the family home. No advance arrangements had been made for him to see the daughters, and when respondent noticed the children were missing, she suspected right away that her husband had done it. At about 7:30 p.m., she called the Castle Rock Police Department, which dispatched two officers. The complaint continues, when the officers arrived, she showed them a copy of the TRO and requested that it be enforced and that the three children be returned to her immediately. The officers stated that there's nothing they could do about the TRO, and they suggested that she simply call the police department again if the children do not return home by 10 o'clock. So they looked at the order and said, give us a call in 3 or 4 hours if the kids aren't back yet. At approximately 8:30, the respondent talked to her husband on his cell phone. He told her he had taken the three children to an amusement park in Denver. She called the police again and asked them to have someone check for her husband or his vehicle at the amusement park in Denver. And the officer with whom she spoke refused to do so, again telling her to wait until 10 o'clock and see if the husband comes back with the kids. At approximately 10:10, she called the police and said her children were still missing, but she was now told to wait until midnight. Maybe the kids will show up. At midnight, she called the dispatcher again and said her children were still missing. She went to her husband's apartment and, finding nobody there, called the police at 12:10. She was told to wait for an officer to arrive, and when none ever showed up, she went to the police station at 12:50 a.m. and submitted an incident report. The officer who took the report made no reasonable effort to enforce the TRO or locate the three children. Instead, he went to dinner. And again, these facts are presumed to be true. So, you know, at approximately 3:20 a.m., respondent's husband arrived at the police station and opened fire with a semi-automatic handgun he had purchased earlier that evening. Police shot back, killing him. Inside the cab of his pickup truck, they found the bodies of all three daughters, whom he had already murdered. So, on the basis of those facts, respondent brought an action claiming that the town violated the due process clause because its police department had an official policy or custom of failing to respond properly to complaints of restraining order violations. And she brought this claim under 42 U.S.C. 1983, which is just your basic action for being deprived of your civil rights by somebody who's acting in a position of authority. Before answering the complaint, the defendants filed a motion to dismiss under Federal Rule Civil Procedure 12b6, and the district court granted the motion, concluding that whether construed as a substantive due process or procedural due process claim, respondent's complaint failed to state a claim upon which relief could be granted. And so I'm not going to get too heavily into this civil procedure stuff because I'm not trying to talk to lawyers here. But if you file a lawsuit against somebody, they can show the lawsuit to the judge and say, hey, judge, this lawsuit doesn't even show something that can be turned into a valid claim. And so failure to state a claim in your lawsuit is fatal to the action, meaning the judge looks at it and goes, you're right, it doesn't state a claim, and they toss the lawsuit. Now, you can always ask to amend your complaint to make it state a claim, assuming there's a way to do that, but quite often it comes down to this, which is a legal issue, and the claim she's trying to make is the police didn't do their jobs, and it deprived me and three children of civil rights issues, and therefore I should be able to make a claim against the police officers. And the district court says, no, you can't do that. You cannot sue them for failing to do their jobs. So a panel of the Court of Appeals affirmed the rejection of the substantive due process claim, but found that respondent had alleged a cognizable procedural due process claim. Don't worry about it. On rehearing, a divided court reached the same disposition, concluding that respondent had a protected property interest in the enforcement of the terms of her restraining order and that the town had deprived her of due process because the police never heard nor seriously entertained her request to enforce and protect her interests in the restraining order. And it was at that point that somebody sought review by the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court said, yes, we will review this case. Bring it on up. So, the court now goes into its opinion to explain why the case was properly dismissed at the lowest level, the trial court. The 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States provides that a state shall not deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So Congress has created a federal cause of action at 42 U.S.C. 1983, where you can sue for the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured by the Constitution and laws. Respondent claims the benefit of this provision on the grounds that she had a property interest in police enforcement of the restraining order against her husband, and that the town deprived her of this property without due process by having a policy that tolerated non-enforcement of restraining orders. And you can see where this is going already. They're saying, basically, you have got to describe this right you have. And they're describing it as whether or not it's a property right. It's like something you own. And you know, it's an odd way to phrase this, but unfortunately you have to phrase things to meet the laws that are on the books. So as the Court of Appeals recognized, and the Supreme Court now reiterates, we left a similar question unanswered in a case called DeShaney versus Winnebago from 1989, which was another case with undeniably tragic facts. And there, local child protection officials had failed to protect a young boy from beatings by his father that left him severely brain damaged. In that case, the Winnebago case, they held that the so-called substantive component of the Due Process Clause does not require the state to protect the life, liberty, and property of its citizens against invasion by private actors. We noted, however, that the petitioner had not properly preserved the argument that state child protection statutes gave him an entitlement to receive protective services in accordance with the terms of the statute, an entitlement which would enjoy due process protection. So they're saying that the previous case that came before them, where they'd found that there was no obligation to protect somebody, they said, well, that case wasn't framed just right for us. So this case here is framed just right. So we'll take a look at that. So here's the thing. Our cases recognize that a benefit is not a protected entitlement if government officials may grant or deny it at their discretion. Okay? So do they have the discretion to make these decisions? The Court of Appeals in this case determined that Colorado law created an entitlement to enforcement of the restraining order because the court-issued order specifically dictated, in its terms, that they must be enforced, and a state statute commanded enforcement of the order when certain objective conditions were met. So it says, you know, if probable cause to believe that the order's been violated, you must arrest this man. And they're saying that the statement made as an order, that you have to do this, that that is something that someone else can count on. But respondent contends that they were obliged to give deference to the Tenth Circuit's analysis of Colorado law on whether she had an entitlement to enforcement of the restraining order. And this is where the Supreme Court is going to differ on this. The critical language in the restraining order came not from any part of the order itself, but from the pre-printed notice to law enforcement personnel that appeared on the back of the order. That notice effectively restated the statutory provision describing peace officers' duties, and at the time of the conduct at issue in this case, the provision read as follows. Whenever a restraining order is issued, the protected person shall be provided with a copy of such order. A peace officer shall use every reasonable means to enforce a restraining order. And elsewhere it says a peace officer shall arrest or seek a warrant for the arrest, and so on and so forth. In making the probable cause determination described above, a peace officer shall assume that the information received from the register is accurate. A peace officer shall enforce a valid restraining order, and so on. The Court of Appeals concluded that the statutory provision, especially taken in conjunction with a statement from its legislative history and with another statute restricting criminal and civil liability for officers making arrests, established the Colorado legislature's clear intent to alter the fact that police were not enforcing domestic abuse restraining orders, and thus its intent that the recipient of domestic abuse restraining order has an entitlement to its enforcement. And they said any other result would render domestic abuse restraining orders utterly valueless. And Scalia and a majority of the Supreme Court said that's not true. He says this last statement about making it utterly valueless is sheer hyperbole. Whether or not respondent had a right to enforce the restraining order, it rendered certain otherwise lawful conduct by her husband both criminal and in contempt of court. The creation of grounds on which he could be arrested, criminally prosecuted, and held in contempt was hardly valueless, even if the prospect of those sanctions ultimately failed to prevent him from committing 3 murders and his own suicide. We do not believe that these provisions of Colorado law truly made enforcement of restraining orders mandatory. A well-established tradition of police discretion has long coexisted with apparently mandatory arrest statutes. So the mere fact that the law says, if this happens, you must arrest that person. If the police don't arrest that person, the victim of what this person does can't say, hey, the police broke the law by ignoring the order to arrest that person. Because the Supreme Court here is saying that even if the law says they have to do it, they don't have to do it. It's police discretion. So it's an interesting way of framing this position, but respondent does not specify the precise means of enforcement that the Colorado restraining order statute assertedly mandated, whether her interest lay in having police arrest her husband, having them seek a warrant for his arrest, or having them use every reasonable means up to and including arrest to enforce the order's terms. Such indeterminacy is not the hallmark of a duty that is mandatory. I suspect if you asked her, she'd say any one of those three would have worked. They didn't do any of them. 0 out of 3 is pretty bad. But Scalia writes, even if the statute could be said to have made enforcement of restraining orders mandatory, because of the domestic violence context of the underlying statute, that would not necessarily mean that the state law gave respondent an entitlement to enforcement of the mandate. Making the actions of government employees obligatory can serve various legitimate ends other than the conferral of a benefit on a specific class of people. So in other words, the restraining order is out there. It's a law and it should be enforced. But if it's not enforced, you can't sue about it, even if you got harmed due to the lack of enforcement of it. So the creation of a personal entitlement to something as vague and novel as enforcement of restraining orders cannot simply go without saying. We conclude that Colorado has not created such an entitlement. So what they're basically saying is that, yeah, there are laws on the books and there are police officers out there charged with enforcing those laws. And if you get harmed because the police didn't enforce the laws, it's not something you can sue for. Unless your state has actually created a law that says, you know, you're entitled to this kind of police law enforcement. And if you don't get it, then you've got a cause of action. And until the states create that cause of action, the feds don't have that. The 18 USC, the 42 USC action I talked about earlier does not create this cause of action for that set of facts. So if the police don't do their job, yeah, people might get hurt. But your beef with Scalia and the Supreme Court now is not with the police for not doing their job. It's going to be with whoever the third party was that committed the crime. And the fact that the police didn't intercede and didn't do their job and didn't stop that crime, nothing you can do about it with the police. Again, go talk to the bad actor. That's what Scalia and company are saying here in the case of Castle Rock and Gonzalez. So that currently is the law on the books. If the police don't do their jobs, yeah, bad things are going to happen, but it doesn't mean you can sue the cops over it. Questions or comments, put them below. Otherwise, talk to you later. Bye-bye.